Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, quite the weekend we're going to be able to look back upon tonight and reflect on what we took away from the spring game. A lot of information to update people on as far as recruiting goes, and a podcast that, for the most part, I think should be pretty easy listening to. We'll get into it. I want to thank our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce, as always. Great partners for us. Just a great, consistent product that they put out, and one that we would always encourage you to try if you haven't already. But, Bud, it was a hell of a Saturday, and a lot of good things going around with the football program right now.
Dude, no doubt, man. This program is on fire right now. Like we said in the little instant reaction, that they seem to be hitting all the right notes. It'd be hard for them to be much better right now, given the personnel they have and given the resources available. They seem to be maximizing it about as best they can. And where do you want to start? I know we discussed a little bit on the post show the impact that the spring game had in the atmosphere, but that I almost feel like we need to hit that again a little bit.
Saturday was just incredible. I mean, by 11 o'clock or so, it was it turned into a Chamber of Commerce type of day as far as the weather goes, and it was immaculate, and it just had a lot of intangibles that you can't really put your fingers on, or a lot of stuff that isn't a little bit of the abstract, but it's just a great feeling, fan base that was positive, excited, a lot of great energy floating around, and like I said, from around 10:30 or 11, there was just a swarm of people in Tallahassee, and it just only continued to grow larger and ultimately culminating in a game that was attended in a fashion that would have been pretty hard to predict otherwise.
I think that's almost where you have to start. It's just the attendance, man. They announced, what, 60-something, and I don't think they were lying. There was no Miami math in that number, and that is just so impressive to me that they were able to do that. And I don't think they expected it. Certainly, if they had expected, I think they might have had more gates open and more people checking tickets, because there were people who were just throwing their tickets on the ground and leaving. Not a lot of them, but there were people. Yeah. Like, my wife didn't go to Florida State and doesn't really care about the Noles as much. And you know, up in the Champions Club, she was looking over the side, and you know, she's like, "Babe, there's still like a lot of people outside in line waiting to get in the game, and it's 3 minutes into the second quarter." They were so full. They just seemed to get everything right, and certainly the weather being as nice as it was played into that and helps make everybody happy, but. Just a great day overall, man. People really seem to be embracing a head coach and a staff who in turn embrace them. Not everything's got to be hard. You know, not everything has to be difficult and feel like rooting for like a stale minor league team. You can have some fun. Now, you got to win. There's no doubt. But you can have some fun, and they did. And I think the fans really appreciated that.
Absolutely. I certainly think a lot of it, you always get these great, like, bounces in enthusiasm whenever you go through a coaching transition, or I shouldn't say always, but it's a frequent byproduct of a coaching change. But there seems to be a little bit more here with that one. And I do think there's a fan base that's excited, a fan base that loves to embrace its past and the traditions come with it. But a guy that has a, you know, there's a lot of commonality between a lot of the fans and the way that they feel and look and see that university between the way that the head coach does. And there's an authenticness, authentic nature that resonates with a lot of people. And I think it's just a combination of a little bit of a unique relationship, at least for now, between the fan base and the head coach, and also kind of a common phenomenon that you get in change or turnover of staff.
Absolutely, man. They've embraced them so much that they're connecting in a way that I'm not sure you see a lot of coaching staffs around the country do. They seem to have really gotten this hire right. And, you know, I heard over the weekend, you know, hey, man, they really like James Franklin and Charlie Strong and all those guys too. And now that you're past all that, you're like, wow, can you imagine if they had hired Charlie Strong or something?
Mm-hmm.
Knowing what we know now as far as how well Taggart and company are doing, it's hard to imagine the latter happening. But if you want more on the game experience, or, you know, on the experience, certainly do listen a little more to the post game reaction show, which should be the podcast right before this in your playlist. Hopefully, you all subscribe to the Nolcast on either iTunes or Google Play Music, depending on if you have an Android or an iPhone. But let's talk a little more about the actual game, what we saw. I know we're not real big on big sweeping takeaways from the game, right? But You know, there were some things that I think that are worth talking about.
Absolutely. One, you know, the level of play was higher than maybe I would have thought. It was nice to see. Well, you got a higher level of play out of one of your quarterbacks in particular than the first two scrimmages maybe would have led you to believe. And in general, that seemed to have a little bit of a ripple effect. But it was a lot of fun, a lot of excitement just to take away from what you saw on the field, not to mention people in the stands and the other things that we just spoke about. I guess, you know, we'll start with the quarterbacks and just kind of bounce around from there. I'm not going to say you have a quarterback controversy or anything like that. I'd just say that I was very pleased with what you saw out of Bailey Hawkman. That was a performance, and again, we're not going to make a whole lot of stats, but you saw skill. You saw what you should try to look at and take away, and obviously the play that resonates the most is the ball that he squeezes in there that ultimately turns into a 91-yard play or whatever to Matthews. But just a lot of things from Hawkman that would lead you to believe that he's a little bit more prepared to play at this level than maybe the first two scrimmages would have.
Yeah, exactly. That played a lot better. And that's an encouraging sign for Florida State, man. That raises the floor in their quarterback room. Do I still think that James Blackman, that I would take him over the other two? Absolutely. I think he'll be your starter come fall. I've said that for a while. I think you're on the same page with me, unless Francois makes a miraculous turnaround. A lot of people would say, well, how could you say that? Hawkman was better in the spring game. Well, the spring game is only a game in name only. It really is just another scrimmage. And in fact, it's probably the least important of the scrimmages and one of the least important spring practices that Florida State has in the spring. You only get 15 of them because it's a split squad scrimmage. Take this into account. The receivers on Hawkman's team, yeah. DJ Matthews, Tamari and Terry, probably your two best receivers since Nooney Murray's out. You also have Ontario Wilson, who's another scholarship receiver, actually.
That's the key word. I have a feeling with where you're going in this.
Yeah. Do you know who Hawkman was throwing against? For the most part, walk-on corners and safeties, not scholarship corners. The scholarship corners were on Hawkman's team. That's who Blackman was throwing against. And who was Blackman throwing to? Keith Gavin, who's legit. Deontay Sheffield, not a scholarship player. Amir Rasul, converted running back. Now, he did have Trey McKitty, who I think is going to be a stud and has been good in spring, like on days he's actually healthy. This is one of the reasons why I think coaches don't even like doing spring games, and Florida State did an awesome one, so credit to them for doing, getting the experience out of it. But I guarantee you, they don't like answering questions about, well, this guy looks so good in the spring game, because they can't say something like I'm about to say, like, well, look, he's throwing against walk-ons, and the other guy's throwing against our two starting cornerbacks. And he's throwing in large part to guys who are not scholarship players and who aren't going to get a lot of run in the fall. And this guy's throwing to our top receivers who are facing walk-ons. That's just kind of the nature of the draft. I do think that they should perhaps reconsider how they do some of the drafting next year to make it a little bit more even. But perhaps, maybe they did it on purpose. You know, who knows with that. It is hard to do meaningful takeaways when you're comparing apples to oranges here. And I really think you are. I saw a tweet, you know, hey, if you had put Blackman on Hawkman's team and Hawkman on Blackman's team, Blackman's team wins by 30. I don't know about 30, but I guarantee you they probably win by a similar or greater amount. But I do think Hawkman showed some nice things. He delivered a nice ball. He slid in the pocket well. He does manage to kind of scramble around and keep a play alive just long enough to where he can find something. And look, if he makes major strides in the spring, I can't completely rule out the idea of him starting. I don't think that he's going to start. I think he'd have to make up a bunch of ground based on what we heard about spring camp. I also am not sure if this is quite a representative sample on the offense as far as what we saw. Like, Ingram, I think the tempo is representative. I think they're going to try and push the heck out of tempo. And I think the formations, for the most part, are representative. But we already talked about this in a piece I wrote up for Tomahawk, you know, recently. I think you're looking at about 6 to 8 quarterback runs per game that are not including sacks. It looks like there were, going through this real quick, Not a lot of quarterback runs. James Blackman, 12 rushes, and that looks includes 9 sacks. So 3 quarterback runs for Blackman. And Bailey Hawkman, 4 rushes, 3 sacks. So 1 actual quarterback run for Hawkman. Just not really representative of what they're going to do on offense as far as their run game. And in fact, Coach Taggart made some comments to that effect after the game. He said, you know, if I had been calling plays, I would have probably you know, run the ball a little more. And we know that they're going to be a very run-heavy offense. I mean, this is a team that's going to run the ball a lot more frequently than Jimbo Fisher's offenses did. So when you look at it, I'm not convinced that this is what the offense is going to look like as far as play calling and play distribution come fall, just based on track record, based on what we know. Who else did you like out there, obviously?
You said it earlier. I think McKitty's poised to have a major, major year. He's going to be a focal point of the offense. Everybody and their aunt is going to talk about Tamari, you know, is going to talk about Terry after what you saw on Saturday. But if you're just looking at the offense, I would say the wide receivers and McKitty. Obviously, LeBourn had a pretty special series of plays as well. But a lot to take away from that. On the defense, I don't know that as many people stood out to me, to be honest, other than, hey, the kid that we got from California is a pretty special player, a kid that you're going to see sooner than later, and appears to fit, you know, hand to glove as far as when it comes to acclimating himself to this program.
Yeah, he doesn't suck. Jaden Woodby is going to be a really good player for this defense, and really, thank God he early enrolled. I mean, those 15 spring practices, that off-season conditioning, that off-season acclimation, I'm not saying he couldn't make any impact if he didn't early enroll, but I do think that early enrolling is really going to help him play a significant part in his defense come fall. As far as guys who were, you know, continuations of what we heard were good in spring, Tamari and Terry has been just kind of the talk of the receiver corps for a while now, dating back to bowl practice. So it's good to see him continue that, obviously. You're going to need him on the outside. I think he's going to be a good player for them. Laybourn took his opportunity and ran with it. Now, I'm seeing all these overreactions of how he's going to be the top back, and clearly, you know, that he needs to start over Akers, and just no, please. But he looked great to me, like you said.
You get the feeling that he'd be all right if he has to wait another year to play. He's probably going to be patient with waiting to get his carries.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I talked to Laybourn and to Terry after the game, and you could tell, you know, Terry wanted to not redshirt last year. Laybourn is, like, still holding a grudge over this, like, very angrily, and is not cool with it. And basically, you know, some people thought I should redshirt and all this other stuff. Just really... Hey, man, that's what drives you? That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I mean, there are stories about NBA players who just completely ball out against the teams that passed him up in the draft. That works. But he showed I liked his vision. I liked his jump cut, obviously. By the way, I like Tamari and Terry's speed.
Yeah.
As he runs down the field to throw a block for Laybourn. And I understand, you know, Laybourn maybe a little bit more out of gas, but Terry is just striding him.
It's easy to look at that, and I know a lot of people have remarked about just the top end speed that you see there. Anybody on defense particularly stand out to you? I will add that I'll add DeMarcus Christmas to the list of people that particularly stood out to me. It doesn't come as a surprise, but a guy who had a solid outing.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a guy to look for. Here's somebody for you. I thought Janarius Robinson made some plays.
He's coming along nicely. I agree.
Yep. Kyle Meyer seems to have bounced back. Just looking at his technique, I know we had a great feature today by Mark Sanders on Tomahawk about the press technique that Florida State's corners are now using, and how they're trying to use a little more patience in their press in their attempt to reroute receivers. That's something that I don't really want to talk about a whole lot on the show, but Myers was the prime example of that. So, and we'd heard he had a good spring. I didn't know he was playing that well, but it's good to see his confidence bounce back. Obviously, Stanford Samuels, we mentioned that he'd been playing a little bit of free safety. In this defense, your safeties have got to be able to cover like corners. At least one of them does. And I think you'll be able to see him some there as well in the fall in certain packages. So that was cool. Janarius, I like getting off the ball. And then Dontavius Jackson is starting to separate himself. I'm not saying he's going to be a star or anything like that this year, but, you know, I'm still very down on his linebacking core overall. And I haven't seen a lot from them as a group. Dontavius is probably the one that really deserves some praise at this point, and he's reshaped his body, but also seems to have good recognition out there. He's always been physical. Now he's a little bit quicker, perhaps, with a little better conditioning. Looks to have tightened up some. And if you can get him and he can stay healthy, then you need to find somebody else for the other spot. And I guess we're going to go into fall not knowing who that's going to be. But look, the strength of this defense is going to be up front and then back end, and you're going to have to kind of figure some things out at linebacker. But it's got a bunch of good playmakers on this defense.
Bud, you mentioned one article on Tomahawk a second ago, and I'll just point people to another one that appeared on the site earlier on Monday. But that was the when you say, like, what do you look for, or what did you see when you watched the game? A little bit of a different conversation here, where we're going to literally talk about what we saw as far as the splits and the formation. It's not a perfect subject for podcasts because you talk a little bit about the stresses and pressures that it puts on different levels of the defense. So I'll point people to the article. It's something that, you know, if you talked about maybe the thing that I was the most excited about, it wasn't so much particular player performances, but it was to kind of the old Baylor offense, some of the Art Briles ideas of spreading out. And some of the, like I said, some of the stress that puts on various levels of the defense.
Yeah, it really does. And all these people out there ask me a bunch of questions about this, and I'm really glad. We had a great discussion in the comment section of that article as well, so I'll encourage you all to read that extended conversation there. But essentially, they just want to make things as easy as possible for the quarterback and for the receivers and the running backs. And they want to do that by using the entirety of the field. And that means you take your receivers and you line them up wide. They're really putting the wide and wide receiver here. And so that does limit you in some ways as far as what routes you're going to run with your outside guys. However, their goal is that with the width of the receivers, you are going to know whether you have single coverage or not. Mm-hmm. So, hey, they're trying to eliminate the ability of defenses to play like combo coverages and matchup zones, right? They want to say, okay, we are so far wide out here that if your safety doesn't come over before the snap, we know that unless you have Derwin James, he's just not going to get there on time after the snap if we run these certain routes, which we are going to do now that we see your safety has not come over. So given that, I talked to Tamari and Terry. I said, your eyes just got to light up when you see that safety not bump over. He goes, oh, yeah, it's go time. I said, exactly. You know, that's one of the things that Baylor really did to stress people. But the other thing, this has a profound impact on the run game as well. And when people think the Baylor splits, they hear the word Baylor and they think a lot of things, obviously a lot of bad things. But also they think, like throwing the ball all around the lot. That's not what this offense is. This offense, the framework and the splits are similar to Baylor. But as far as the approach in terms of the percentage of passing versus run, that's not what this is. They are going to be a run-heavy offense. If you got DJ Matthews out there and you have Tamari and Terry out there split out wide, that linebacker's in a bind. He's got to be able to get over there and try and get DJ on a screen, and he's still got to worry about Cam Akers up the middle. And a lot of times, he's going to be wrong either way. And so Florida State wants to get a very clean box count, right? They want to look up there, and they will say, okay, we got six in the box, zone read. We got five, we're just going to hand it to Cam. We got seven, well, guess what? Pitch it outside to DJ, see what he can do. I do think he's going to have a big-time year, by the way, as long as he stays healthy. He's just too agile and too quick for linebackers and safeties to cover. I really think he's going to be a matchup nightmare for them. And they're going to score some points with this offense. The guys seem to be taking to it as well as they seem to be taking to the tempo.
Again, it's not a perfect subject matter for a podcast, but it's not real complicated either. This is kind of boiling football down to some of the more simple ideas as far as numbers, making, you know, you have playmakers, you want to give them space, you want to put as much stress on the defense, and this is only these formations and these concepts, in my opinion, are only going to be made all the more potent if you can, in fact, run the ball with your quarterback. Just another thing to look for, another thing to watch, and it is an additional element that makes it all the more difficult to defend.
Absolutely, dude. So here's a question for you that I'll throw at you. Somebody asked me in the comments or was it email? I think it was email today. He said, hey, how do you take and you separate the hype for this team. Like, can this team live up to the hype? And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be able to separate program health and hype for the long term from expectations in the short term. My expectations in the short term is that this team is going to lose at least three games. There are a lot of spots where it's very thin. It's going to have to fix some issues in recruiting. It's also going to have bumps along the way putting in this new offensive system. Although I think it's a very player-friendly offensive system, I do think anytime you have something this drastic change, obviously Florida State ran a very slow, methodical system prior. Now you have a super up-tempo, or I don't say super up-tempo, but more of an up-tempo system. There are going to be some kind of fits and starts along the way. So in my opinion, this program, the health right now is excellent. And we'll talk about recruiting in the second half of the show, but man, they have got just recruits fired up, parents fired up, alumni, donors, all that kind of stuff fired up. Obviously the fans, 60,000 strong in a spring game, are fired up. But they've got to be able to differentiate between that and understanding, hey, it looks like he probably did hire the right guy, or at least he's doing all the right things so far, from you got to go play the number one schedule in the nation this year. And we were already expecting this to be a down year just based on roster trends. Even before Jimbo flaked out and stopped coaching, right? Even if we had pinpointed this on the show 30-something months ago. We said, hey, you got a nice window here, 2016, 2017, to really win something. And I think that's why people were annoyed with us when we said, look, 2016 was a missed opportunity. We know you had a redshirt freshman quarterback in DeAndre, but look at all the talent you had on that team. You got to make the most of 2017. And then 2017 happened. We were always expecting, regardless of head coach, for 2018 to be a down year because of the talent flight to the NFL, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So you got to keep the expectations for this year in check, while at the same time being really happy about the future of this program and the health of this program, where you see it going.
I think that's a good point and a good reminder of the needed delineation between the overall state of the program and where it's going and all the positive things that are associated with the program right now. Remove the fact that you have to play the schedule that you do come next year. And so,
do we need to talk about Willie Taggart's comments on Francois?
Yeah, I was going to say probably we don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this. And the whole topic of Francois is something that's been kind of discussed very thoroughly. I'll put it that way. But I do think it's worth mentioning and reflecting on.
So I'm sitting there in the press conference after the game, and he gets asked by Safid Dean, who's actually sitting right next to me, about what's Francois' status with the team? And Taggart said he's still with the team. This is following his marijuana citation, and I'm not going to get into the whole like police looking at him for 2 months or whatever thing. But I thought Taggart was really speaking to him using some not so subtle language.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, he's still with the team. We're handling it internally. And then he started talking about decisions and, importantly, who you hang out with. And he said,
it's not a reoccurring theme or anything.
Yeah. He said, you just got to really think about who you hang out with. And I thought that was a message. Hey, if somebody keeps showing up, reports with law enforcement, don't hang with that person anymore. But he also said, I think if you hang with your teammates all the time, there probably won't be any trouble. So I got to tell you, Taggart is not shy about basically telling Francois in public, can you please shape up and just not like make bad decisions for a little bit? And I don't care about weed, by the way. Like, I really don't. But it is, I tweeted this, context matters, man. If you're already on thin ice for behavior and the quality of teammate you are or have not been, then Maybe you just need to stay clean and just not do anything for a couple months. You know, can you have a very boring summer? That would be the absolute best thing for Florida State and for Francois. If he just has a boring summer, Operation Boring Summer.
Those are the best type of summers for pretty much any football player, but that would be particularly needed for one DeAndre at this point. Let's see. Bud, you mentioned this in the instant, but I think it's worth us just devoting 90 seconds to. You saw some of the pace again. You're not going to be some of the first installations of like Chad Morse's offense at Clemson or something like that as far as the number of plays, but You also saw an offense snap the ball with, you know, 31 seconds left on the play clock as well. So there's going to be a pretty big change of pace at the level that you play, and you saw kind of just some of the first showings of that on Saturday.
Makes sense. If you play that fast, the defense can't get complicated blitzes in. You have great depth compared to about 90% of the programs you play. Why not get those kids into the ballgame? Why not have everybody on the field stay with fresh legs? And I got to tell you, Ingram, this is something I do think impacted this program under Jimbo in the last couple of years when he started to slow down and just become, you know, glacially slow. They never got their backups into the game because they were playing so slow. They never got to play 65 or 70 or 75 or 80 or 85 or 90. And because of that, I do think that impacted guys' practice habits. If you bust your butt in practice the whole week and you still don't get in the game despite being like a former four or five star, eventually you're going to be like, man, screw it. Like, I can take today off practice. I don't need to go hard. I'm not going to get in the game anyway.
It has a ripple effect. It also doesn't let you just get real game time. It doesn't let you become a better player by playing. I completely agree with your first comment. It also doesn't take some of the reps and wear and tear away from your first team either. I mean, there's a lot of layers to the onion as far as the negative side effects from having every game be a contested one.
You don't think every single game should be a single score game?
It would be nice to not be great to not have Wake Forest thrown into the end zone on the final play of the game. Yeah.
My goal is to knock out these like a 3 or 4 instant reaction podcasts this year with 5 minutes left in the third.
I was going to say with what, 8 minutes left in the game or something like that.
Yeah. Exactly. Like Forest State should be up 3 or 4 touchdowns and just cruising because they've got their athletes in space. They've created one-on-one opportunities. They've scored. And they've got some quick stops on defense and use their athleticism. You know, I got to tell you, when Florida State recruits kids versus like other schools, Florida State's kids look a lot more athletic. I do think that is a goal of this staff to have that continue on to Saturdays. That shouldn't just be on Friday nights. That needs to happen on Saturdays. Now, Florida State should continue to look more athletic than their opponents and considerably more so on a more consistent basis. So I think that's a pretty big deal. Now, this is some kind of insider information, but talking to some recruits and recruit parents who were there, another thing that I was really encouraged by was Dontavius Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently gave a real awesome post-game speech about how this needs to be a brotherhood and how, look, like, remember, now that spring's over, remember last year and how this team was fragmented and how there were all these cliques on this team. This is something... Now, guys, I think feel a little more okay talking about. And when I talk to him, I try to press him on it to say, okay, well, how? How did that happen? And how have you changed it? But apparently, Dontavius gave a great speech following up a nice spring game from him, and that really resonated with recruits and players there. So it's good to see him emerging potentially as a leader on defense. And I'm not one of those guys that believes you can be a leader if you're not any good on the field. So it's good that he paired like. He's always had passion. It's not always been channeled the best way, but now it does seem like Dontavius is channeling the passion on and off the field, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's playing well on the field. He is apparently eating right and conditioning right because he looks a lot in much better shape. And he's also stepping up as a leader on defense. So I will tell you, like recruits in the room were very impressed in the locker room by his post-game speech, as were some of the alumni in that room. Speaking of the team unity thing, man, this is something that kind of surprised me. I know some people had said that Calvin Bruton had mentioned that he didn't know teammates' names. And I didn't talk to Calvin, but I did talk to Laybourne after the game pretty extensively. And he did not curse with me, at least on camera, like he did on the broadcast, which was hilarious.
One of the better moments of the past decade or so.
Yeah. Oh, man. Shout out to Aria Masudi, the Tomahawk Nation alum who was up there on the sideline taking his
R.S. I loved his reaction to that, too, because he both, like, appreciated it and also was like, yeah, I need to be professional and keep moving through this, but you said exactly what I think you just said, and boy, wow, okay.
At least it was accurate. So I said, hey, why is this team not as clicky anymore? Because it's easy to say, hey, we're tighter now, or we don't have clicks anymore, but how? Why? Like, give me some examples of why that's happening. And he said, well, team dinner. And it's something I'd heard about, so I kept talking to him about it. And I haven't written about this yet, but I do plan to as well. And, you know, they're doing team dinner on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursdays. And that means the whole team and the coaching staff. And a lot of the kids, I don't think liked it, man, to be honest. I think they like being able to do their own thing. Especially some of the upperclassmen probably didn't want to have to come eat with the rest of the team three nights a week. That's required. If you don't come, you're going to get some penalty points.
Right.
It'll be reflected. And if you get enough penalty points, your accountability group has to go do a little dawn patrol, do a little running. That is, by the way, how they do that. It's not like the accountability group is not necessarily by position. It's groups of guys, different mixes, offense, defense, seniors, freshmen, that kind of thing. And they have multiple accountability groups. So you don't want to get one of the three or four guys on the team who routinely rack up accountability kind of demerits, right? Because then you got to go run early in the morning. But you know, Laybourne said he really thought it helped him gel as a team and also just meet other people on your team. There are 100 guys on this roster if you count the 15 or so walk-ons who are, you know, probably guaranteed walk-on spots in the fall. That's a lot of people to get to know, but I do think that, like, you don't want to have strangers in your own locker room. And so having these guys do this, maybe it's not something you need to do every single year. Maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe not three times a week every single year. There's so many things that kind of ailed this program that we thought, hey, this isn't necessarily the right way or the wrong way to do it, but it's the right time to try this specific approach. Much like the whole Jimbo all bark, no bite thing, eventually the kids figured out he wasn't actually going to punish him and he would kind of let him off on a lot of stuff. Willie seems to be very much the opposite of that, right? Not a lot of bark, a lot of bite, a lot of follow through. The kids know what to expect if they screw up. I think this team dinner kind of fits in that same mold. It's not the only approach that could work, but I do think it's an approach that is working so far as getting these kids, you know, getting these kids to be accountable and to be more of a family. Taggart also addressed the team after the game and he told them, you know, hey, if you get in trouble, that's not being a team player. That's being selfish. You know, run-ins with the law are selfish. No means no every time. Be smart. Take an Uber. All that kind of stuff. And really, you know, kind of trying to hammer that home. I know at USF, players used to get a text. This is Stephen Godfrey reported this, by the way, every Friday night about their weekend, about how they were going to have a good team weekend and how they were not going to be, you know, selfish decisions don't hurt just you. They hurt the whole team and you know, don't hurt your family type thing, which is kind of mafia, by the way. Like, hey, don't hurt the family. But you know, the recruits really seem to like that. That also resonated with the parents, you know, because that's essentially parenting. And if you're a parent, mm-hmm. going to maybe let your kid go to this school, you want to make sure that, hey, the reminders on how to act, they never really hurt, especially not when you're away from home for the first time. Also had a fun story come out. Jim Henry from the Democrat tweeted this, that Taggart, they had a little fight at practice one day. And Taggart let the fight go, let the two guys, you know, scrap. Not obviously like a brawl or anything, but let it play out. And then afterwards, he made him run laps holding hands. And so then Levante Taylor and Tamarian Terry both kind of fessed up that was
took ownership. Interesting.
Yeah, that was then they got to they got to run the laps holding hands. So that was cool. And I'm trying to think, before we get to recruiting here, I'm just trying to empty the notebook a little bit. Hope folks are okay with this. Did you happen to see UF spring game?
Yeah, I did. I guess this is like the next evolution of spring games, where you're just having alumni come in and not pad up and play. And I'm just not that there was ever any like purity in the spring game, but it just. Just curious as to where exactly they're planning on taking that.
I listened to the Gators Breakdown podcast, which is an interesting show. Just, you know, I think they do some pretty good work, and they were all complaining about how they thought it was. They were concerned about what it meant because they thought, okay, if you got to bring in like stars from the '90s to actually catch passes in the game, and then you count those passes in the game in the stats that they give out to all the media, and then you reference them. Are you actually kind of like hiding how bad this offense has looked throughout spring? Like, is that why they're doing it? I'm not saying that is why. I'm saying that's what the guys on the Gators Breakdown show we're kind of wondering about. I saw there were some writers who kind of called it Mickey Mouse and thought it was just you know, not taking it seriously enough. And I'm not one of these guys who, let's take a spring game really seriously. It's you know, the sanctity of the spring game.
The sanctity of the spring game. But you do only get 15 practices.
This is true.
And you do only get so many reps in those practices. So to give some of those reps to a guy who played college football, you know, 17 years ago, makes me, I wonder what you're doing there. Okay.
I mean, I think this is interesting. The other thing I wanted to talk about was, and I bring this up too, because I'm going to bring this around on my point about alumni and just how many alumni FSU had there and just what an impact it had. Did you happen to see Jonathan Vilma today?
Yeah, man. I really, Vilma's probably my favorite ex-Cane of all time. I don't know why I like him. I just enjoyed the way he played, and he's, you know, he played for the Saints, and good player, and he's a rather direct individual, and he kept that line of interaction on social media when referring to a former, or not a former, a current Hurricane linebacker even.
Yeah, so he's talking to McLeod, and McLeod had posted something on social media, on Instagram about like how he was, you know, basically he was like posting a photo and talking about, you know, how he's going to be a good linebacker and whatnot. And Vilma starts making fun of him for being fat, and then says that he would punch him in that fat gut if I had a chance. Like, just, I don't know. It was there was a juxtaposition there with that and the alumni of Florida State had back this weekend. I mean, I will tell you, like FSU's alumni this weekend had a big time impact on their recruiting and the family feel. I mean, we overuse that term family feel sometimes, but they really are trying to foster that. In kind of an exceptional way. It just kind of was like, wow, like the use of alumni, right? Or the interaction of alumni with Florida State this weekend, like an A+. UF, kind of cool, kind of corny as well, got to say. Mm-hmm. I mean, that maybe have those guys play an alumni flag football game at half, I think would be a better call, as FSU did. And yeah, Miami's guys, I mean, I can't rewatch this because I don't think it was televised. So I have no idea how he played at all. But
was it McLeod or was it the Pinckney kid?
Oh, maybe it was Pinckney. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it doesn't really. I mean, I don't think it is particular. The overall message is what you said. Anytime you get Vilma and DJ Williams clowning on a current kid on the roster, it just wasn't a great piece of harmony in general for the U. A school that traditionally probably fostered that relationship better than any school in the country for a long period of time.
Before we get to recruiting, is there a position or two that you're very confident in and a position or two that you're like, they're going to need to figure out some answers come fall because this doesn't seem like a high-level position yet?
Yeah. Well, the obvious one is running back. I mean, you almost expect to see like some – you're not going to see any wishbone, but maybe a diamond formation. You'll see something unique. You've got too much talent there. If Jaquez Patrick is your third option, then you've got a hell of a backfield. I mean, wide receiver, you think everything's not that everything's not good, but do you think Keith Gavin's continue to progress? Are you just kind of hearing some other names right now? Or I don't know. I've just kind of been a little bit surprised about the lack of buzz around Gavin. But otherwise, the wide receiver position seems to be in pretty decent hands, assuming that Nooney comes back in a condition to contribute.
Yeah, if you go Terry, DJ, Nooney, Gavin across the board, and mix in McKitty, who we both think is going to have a big-time year, that's a really nice set of five pass catchers. But I agree. You know, Gavin did not look great in the spring game. He's going to need some more polishing to be kind here to make a real impact in the fall. I will say this, though. I do think that he has the impact to be your over-the-middle target. Right, Terry is still pretty skinny. I mean, he's a tall guy, but he's not real thick. Mm-hmm. Obviously, DJ is today. DJ said on social media on Twitter that he picked 29 as a number because 2 for Deion Sanders and 9 for Peter Work. And then the kicker, Logan Tyler, or punter rather, is clowning him, saying, "I thought you picked it because you weigh 129 pounds," which was pretty good. But it was, you know, kind of reflects that he is very skinny. I do think Gavin has the ability to be your physical over the middle target along with McKitty. So it wouldn't totally shock me to see him play a little bit in the slot this year, because his wingspan's very large. He's a thick kid. I think he can hold on to the football while taking a hit, hopefully. So I'll agree with the starters, but they got some talented kids coming in at receiver. By the way, before I forget, a kind of a weird situation happened out in L.A. a couple weeks ago when I was there. Did I tell you about this, the Warren Thompson thing?
I don't know that I remember it, if you do.
So I'm out there in L.A., and it's not totally unheard of, depending on the tournament, for a kid who's already signed to play 7-on-7. But Warren Thompson was playing for Team Tampa. And I thought, I was like, well, that's kind of odd, because Warren Thompson, who, if people don't know, listen to the show, is a 2019 or 2018 signee for Florida State at receiver at Armwood. He looks like he's about 25 years old,
mm-hmm.
both in the face and physically. And my thought was, when I first saw him, I was like, well, if he makes a big play, someone's going to notice this and say something. Well, he happened to catch the winning touchdown in the quarterfinal. So ultimately, I guess, I didn't see it go down, but what I had a source tell me was that Team Tampa got DQ'd for using that, which isn't a big deal. I mean, I don't think they weren't going to win the next game anyway. I don't think, and they probably wouldn't have won that game without Thompson. What this guy told me had been relayed to him was that the team was apparently saying that Thompson wasn't going to qualify anyway, so it wasn't a big deal. And when I checked with my Florida State source on that, they said they would be. They'd be very surprised if he didn't qualify. Just, I don't know, a little something. It just struck me as odd. I'm not saying he's not going to qualify. Obviously, I trust my Florida State source over my secondhand source that allegedly, overheard mm-hmm. the reasoning from the 7-on team.
Right.
But it did strike me as kind of odd. But there are some electric playmakers coming in who I think will get touches come fall as freshmen in the receiving corps. I'm most worried, I think, about the offensive tackle situation. Like, I know everybody's worried about center, and I get it, but you don't have Eberle and Boselli playing. Or, excuse me, Eberle and Bavion playing. When you get Alec Eberle and Bavion Johnson back, I think your snaps are going to improve immediately. Tackle-wise, I want to see Josh Ball take a next step. Man, I don't know. Tackle definitely worries me some.
Tackle put me right there as well. I think you got decent pieces there. I'm just a little concerned about where you leave in spring with who seemingly have locked up some positions there.
Defensively, I totally agree with you. Defensive tackle, even without Marvin Wilson, I think will continue to be a strength. Now, obviously, losing Nadi is very tough, but Fred Jones, I thought, played extremely well in this game. I loved what the corners had, and I mean, throughout all spring, I heard they were good. So that was good kind of confirmation bias there. Let me ask you this. DeKalen Brooks, Derek Brooks' kid, doesn't look like a freak athlete, and he's not real big. He does seem to know where to be and does seem to make some plays, which occasionally you see at the college level, a guy who's not real, not a freak athlete, but still able to make some plays. If he is the star next year, are you worried?
I'd certainly have to see how it plays out on field, but I would think that I would know that you'd have a certain ceiling at the position. And not that you don't at every position, but I would think that, you put yourself, you'd be dealing with some limitations, perhaps.
I think I'm right there with you, man. Like, I thought Hamsa would have a bigger spring. Everybody agrees he's real athletic, but I don't know that he made quite the strides this spring that I thought he was going to make. Certainly not a kid I would ever write off, not with that level of physical talent. But mm-hmm. we'll have to see what it looks like when Carlos Becker. We'll have to see what happens when he comes back. I really like where they're at corner and safety. I'm just not sure about star and backer. I mean, D-Jax and then who? Mm-hmm. I don't know there. One thing I do think we might see out of this staff, though, is the concept of like getting value out of a player with a single attribute, as opposed to not playing him until he's a complete player. Janarius Robinson looks pretty good when he's just rushing upfield. This staff might be willing to play some guys and feature them for like one skill as opposed to having them have a complete mastery of the entirety of the game of football before they put them in the game. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can extract some value out of some guys who aren't necessarily good players, but might have a good attribute there to be able to provide some value for the defense.
We talked about the great day that was Saturday for Florida State. Don't know that our own little personal event could have gone any better. So just want to thank everybody that came out to Township. It was spectacular. Had met everything from, I think, people that were a little bit older than my mom to current students to members of law enforcement to just fantastic to be able to interact with our listener base. And want to thank Matt and everybody at the For the Table for helping us put on what was what I think was a pretty enjoyable time for all that involved.
Absolutely, man. That was a blast. Just an awesome setting. You know, one thing that people came away from saying, they were surprised at how good the food at Township is. And Township has an actual chef. Like, that place has good food.
Very.
It's not just a beer hall.
Very good food.
I actually think their food might be better than the food at Madison Social. I know it's sacrilege, and I know everybody loves Madso. I think they're creative. I think they do a really good job. The breakfast sandwich, by the way, which they serve until 4, is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That thing is something serious. So hopefully we can recruit some more people to go to Township more often. May have to have another event like this come the fall. But speaking of recruiting, man, we got a lot of recruiting to talk about. I've got a lot of stuff here I need to drop, and I know people are excited about this.
Absolutely. So a decent amount of new additions. Even had one that popped right as we started recording tonight. But where exactly do you want to start when you look back at the weekend as far as a recruiting perspective?
I think just the experience, right? They had an ambitious plan, and even though they had some curveballs thrown their way, like, I don't know, 300 kids showing up from a 7-on tournament, mm-hmm. that the coaches were not expecting to come. Look, they really knocked this thing out of the park, man. And at least I'm sure that there's a lack of individual attention to be able to be given to that number of kids when you have all those 7-on-7 kids show up, because there was a 7-on-7 tournament that I think got, I don't know, either ended early or can't. I'm not totally clear on the details, but I do know the kids were there, and I don't think that staff expected all of them. 6 o'clock game time really helped as far as being able to do things with recruits during the day. Like, I don't know, take the number one recruit in the nation to the president's house,
mm-hmm.
and maybe have him meet some of your most famous and successful alumni at the alumni event, and basically treat that for Kayvon Thibodeau like almost an official visit.
It was pretty official, unofficial visit, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, they really rolled out the red carpet for him within the rules, of course. But as far as who he was able to meet with, you know, Jameis, President Thrasher, a bunch of prominent alumni, Deion Sanders, Derrick Brooks. But it wasn't just him. I mean, clearly, look, they rolled out the red carpet for him probably more than any other kid, and he's the number one kid in the nation, so it makes sense. But that kid loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll start there. I know we got commitments we got to talk about, but everybody wants to hear about number one. He had a blast, man. He really connected, I think, with his coaching staff. You know, my sources on the coaching staff feel like he did a tremendous job also connecting with his mom. They're expecting to get him back for a visit come the fall, an official visit, and that's great. Better lock that in. You know, I think there's an actual chance that this kid leaves California. I'm usually pretty hesitant to say that, but they really think they hit this out of the park. I'll tell you this, too, and as far as I know, he didn't commit, but that photo there that
it's a hell of a photo
that he tweeted out, you know what that looks like to me? A commit photo. Oh, which, by the way, 3 or 4 episodes ago, maybe 5 or 6, we talked about, hey, there was some of the details that some of my high school coaches didn't think Florida State was getting right, and their kids were noticing, mm-hmm. right? Remember when we talked about this?
We did, yeah.
Like, they thought the photos that Florida State was doing for them on campus weren't that great. And they thought that, like, the lanyards and the name tags and the wristbands and the graphics just were kind of, whatever. Like, not something that the kids were, like, impressed to show off, to wear back home. Well, that's all changed.
Mm-hmm.
Either word got back to the coaching staff, or maybe they listened to the show or something. Or maybe that was just already in the works and probably something we shouldn't take credit for. But much more impressive now, according to my people who are on campus. Had a more professional quality photographer there, taking creative shots the kids actually liked. you know, letting the kids pose how they want to pose. Obviously, I know Dante Lucas, who committed, we'll talk about him in a minute, but he was able to go on the field and do a bunch of shots that he wanted to do, as opposed to taking the campus tour when they took a lot of the other kids on the campus tour. So that was solid, because he had already seen it, obviously. You know, just so many little elements they seem to have knocked out of the park here, man. And it really, other than just being a cool, young, hip staff, the attention to detail seemed to be really on point this weekend. From the time of game, they had a player alumni panel. And who's on your alumni panel? Well, how about Hall of Famers like Deion Sanders and Derrick Brooks, as well as Corey Fuller, who was an excellent player at college, longtime NFL player, and is now a high school coach at Godby.
Right.
Now, I didn't see the panel, but that's who I was told, just a couple people who were on it. You know, that's a big-time deal, man. That really packs a punch. Those are older players, but those are players that people know who they are. The kids know who Deion and Derrick Brooks are because they've been in the NFL so long.
Hall of Famers. You also had some of the better players to ever play their position. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. You also had current players doing a great job recruiting. Trey McKitty is just such an invaluable recruiter to him, like to that program. He's not on social media necessarily, like just beating the FSU drum all the time. But that's the easy work, man. It's easy to send a tweet. It's not as easy to say, hey, on a Friday night, I'm going to give up my Friday night to hang with my friends. And instead, I'm going to host this high school. I'm going to hang out with a high schooler and show him Florida State. But McKitty really loves Florida State in a way that not a lot of players do. And I'm not saying they don't love Florida State, but like McKitty really likes Florida State and wants to show. It just goes all out every time he hosts a kid. Now, you don't host kids on unofficial visits, certainly, but you do connect with them. And I was told McKitty just did a great sell job all throughout the weekend, and that was very big. So that was kind of the more general stuff. Obviously, we talked about Thibodeau just rolling out the red carpet and making it almost more like an official. The one thing that I was told with Thibodeau that is a concern is how much he was vibing with other commits in the class. There's a different feel for California kids, and I'm not saying he doesn't fit in with them. I was just told that he wasn't always necessarily hanging with the other commits in the class. Now, he's not a commit yet, so maybe that's why. When he comes back, that will definitely be, I think, a point of emphasis for the staff to make sure that the other kids in the class, other than, you know, Jaden, who's in the prior class, but a Cali kid, that they all recruit him and really make him understand, hey, this is the place that you can come and live and play football at for the next 3 or 4 years of your life. Because other than that, I think they knocked it out of the park. I think Florida State has to be considered a legitimate contender for him. I'm not going to go out and say they lead, although at this point it would not surprise me if they do. Certainly he hasn't named a lead or anything. He has continued to tweet about Florida State for about the next 48 hours.
Yeah.
Pretty hard. I also think he's a kid who likes the attention, likes the fun, and we'll see how this kind of visit high wears off. But that's kind of the update I have on Thibodeau. He really liked the plan they laid out for him. I think he appreciated all the personal attention they gave him, including all the people he got to meet. I think they overcame the obstacle of distance at least somewhat. And if you get the kid back on campus, then you're going to have a real shot to sign him. Depending on how USC does, certainly. Like that's I can't just ignore that. Like, yeah. If USC goes 12-0 this year or 11-2, you know, then everything kind of changes.
A kid that maybe Florida State fans haven't thought themselves to be all that serious a contender with, despite signing a family member last year. But Evan Neal, I know they made a decent amount of progress with him. Again, not necessarily that they're his leader or anything else, but by all accounts, it sounded like this weekend was a positive with him as well.
Enjoyed the experience immensely. I mean, really liked the whole experience of the spring game. Thought, you know, they had a concert there. I think it really blew him away. Bonded with some other kids in this class. Certainly, he's already teammates with two commits that we're going to talk about probably after we get done talking about some of the targets. But you know who he's super, super tight with? McKitty. Because McKitty was a longtime IMG kid, right? Neal is a longtime IMG kid. And by longtime, I mean a lot of these IMG kids transfer in just for their senior year. But Neal's going to be a three-year player for IMG. And McKitty was a multi-year player at IMG too. They bonded over that. And some of their time there, I believe, overlaps. So they are certainly really tight. McKitty's going to be really key there. I think Evan meeting with Greg Fry, I think the staff seeing that, yes, that number that starts with 390 as far as his weight is, you know, a little bit concerning, but he's not like a sloppy 390, if that's even possible for a human, because he's 6'7 and a quarter. I believe that after they saw his body composition, that they believe he can play offensive tackle as opposed to guard. And that certainly moves him up on their board quite a bit because, like we'll talk about in a second, Lucas, who they got, was one of their top guard prospects, and they think they're in really good with the Will Putnam kid out of Tampa Plant, who's another guard. He wasn't in the game, but he visited recently, and they think they've made a good move there. Evan Neal, they got to get him back on campus, certainly. Miami is the main contender there, although Alabama certainly, I think, has some residual because he used to be committed there to the Tide. I think he'd be an excellent addition to the class. I really do. They need tackles. I think that was, you know, imparted to him, hey, you are going to play early if you come here and you come in shape and you work hard. You got to get mom on campus. As far as I know, she wasn't with him. And if you get her on campus, you impress her. I don't know why they wouldn't impress her. They seem to be doing a great job with all the moms out there. But that's going to be big, man. They've got to make sure that they get mom on campus and they follow up with her.
Two other kids that visited, defense end out of South Florida, Chris Bogle, and then a kid out of Georgia, the safety Aaron Beasley.
Okay, so Chris Bogle, big-time defensive end out of South Florida. As far as I know, had a good time. I don't think he's close to a commitment. I know he was kind of joking around about it on Twitter. I still believe Miami is the top competition for him. Now, he is pretty friendly with a receiver named John Dunmore. I believe he's going to Florida State. I think Florida State thinks he's going to Florida State. And I think if you asked him honestly, he thinks he's going to Florida State. So that's probably the top receiver on their board right now, given that Ladson has now committed to Clemson. And I think if you get Bogle up again and you're able to get Dunmore there with him, maybe we'll be able to sway him. But I think they made a strong impression on him. They're going to want to take multiple defensive ends this year in the pass rusher mold. Last year, they took a lot of depth on the defensive line. I don't know how many true impact guys they took, but they took some needed bodies. And I think they took some bodies who they feel are going to grow into defensive tackles, like Briggs potentially, but also Malcolm Lamar.
Beasley.
Beasley is a big-time hitter. I think he's a guy who profiles as someone who can play the star position. Now, he actually plays for Heard County in Georgia. If that sounds familiar, that's Emory Jones' school, mm-hmm. the quarterback who signed with Florida. But FSU made a big-time impression on him, too, man. They feel very good about where they are with Beasley. He would definitely be a, you know, a quote-unquote take for them right now if he wanted to commit. So that would be really good if they're able to get him. But they did a great job on him, too. Just the overall job that this weekend with the big-time kids was very impressive. I've had like so many conversations now as far as how stuff's going and what people think is going to happen.
Bud, you mentioned some of these on the instant reaction, so we won't spend a ton of time, but do want to go over the success of the weekend as far as what resulted in actual commitments, and then we had another commitment added tonight. But of all the kids, at least all the 2019 kids, the one that probably stands out the most is Dante Lucas, the offensive lineman at IMG.
Big-time player, big-time guard, a guy that I think as soon as Telly Lockett was hired, he was basically moved to the commit category on their board. Obviously, he believed played with Dante's father, who's deceased, has known his mother for a very long time, coached his brother Maurice when he was at Miami Central, who played for West Virginia and is now, I believe, still with the Bucks, has known Dante for a long, long time. That was as lock can be. I did put in my crystal ball for that, by the way, in December, which was 6 weeks before anybody else did. But apparently you get a certain number of points for
some kind of multiplier in there that we're not aware of.
You get a certain number of points for having 247 Sports as you're listed as your employer, I guess, because the number four predictor, who was like 7 or 8 weeks after me, got more points than I did for doing mine in December. So that was curious. But look, elite level player, big time social media personality as well. The kid who didn't really want to commit early necessarily, and his mom didn't want him to until he took his SAT, I believe is what we had reported prior. Willie Taggart really won her over, got her blessing for him to commit. And here's something interesting, by the way. He wants to be an early enrollee. So I know now his plan is to take a whole bunch of visits and whatnot, you know, still wants to take visits. However, he's got to take a bunch of classes to be an early enrollee. I'm not sure these plans are going to be followed through. I think eventually he may take a visit or two. I don't think he's going to be a kid who's going to be visiting somewhere every single weekend. I think he's also going to be pretty visibly recruiting for Florida State on social media and at IMG. That'll be a big deal. I mean, just a thick kid with good body control can really get some movement at the point of attack, can get low. I think I told you all this on the last show, on the show when he visited me for the junior day. But I think it was Fry or somebody there had gone and you know, because he's like 360 something right now. And somebody had taken the sheet from the NFL Combine of the guys who were ended up being like first round draft picks as guards and had the weights there. And they said, hey, put this in your room and look at this. All right. This is where you want to go. Look what these guys weigh. 305, 310, 315, 320. Not 360 and not in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to play early, if you want to be a guy who goes to the league in 3 years, year one can't be about getting in shape, right? That's got to be year zero. You got to come here ready to shape to play. But he really appreciated that. That was a straightforward approach. You know something else he really liked? Check this out. When he committed, Greg Fry took him to each offensive lineman who's already on the team. And it was, hey, man, this guy's part of our group now. He's one of us now. Welcome him to the family, that type of thing. So that was really cool for Dante. I know he really appreciated that. And his mom appreciated that as well, I mean, as well as the academic presentation. So you get him in the class. You get Jaleel McCray, who we spoke about, linebacker from IMG. Look, I don't know that Jaleel's a kid that you need to take in April. You know, I'm always honest with you all about prospects. To me, this is an upside bet. Jaleel's a kid who has torn both ACLs prior in his high school career. A lot of times, your bounce back year is not the year after you do it, but it's the year after that. I think that they believe he can be a better player than he is right now. Certainly, he's already made an impact at IMG, and I think that will definitely help them recruit the school there too. He's a passionate kid who likes Florida State a lot. Look, I'm not going to lie. I don't know that he's going to be an impact player at Florida State based on what I've seen so far, but it's also admittedly hard to project how a kid is going to bounce back in his second year removed from tearing two ACLs. I just don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure that they know either, by the way, but maybe they're just saying, hey, we're willing to make a bet on this kid, and it seems like they're doing that. I still think they need to sign four linebackers, and you know, if you sign four and the other three are equally or preferably more talented than McCray, then I think you're going to be pretty happy with your linebacker class. Because certainly they got some dudes on this roster right now who just can't play. And so there is a lot of playing time to be had.
Bud, we just spoke about one former Florida commitment in McCray. Let's talk about another one that is now a Florida State commitment. Prospect that we profiled a couple of weeks ago, large, tall, kind of lanky wide receiver, Maurice Schoolsby.
Yeah, and I wonder what position he's even going to play here. There's some interesting stuff. We had some people point out to us that Willie Taggart has not sent out a ring tweet for Schoolsby.
Mm-hmm.
And I've not had a chance to talk with him post-visit, so I'm not exactly sure how his conversation with Coach Taggart went down or if it went down. Because it does seem that Taggart's pretty consistent in tweeting out a ring for everybody who commits. And McCray got one and Lucas got one pretty shortly after they committed. So it's certainly possible that that he did commit to Taggart and everything is all good and he's accepted as a commit. And that just all the busyness of the spring game prevented time for a ring tweet. And now it's almost too late to send one. You know, I think Schoolsby, this is an interesting take that they're willing to do it right now. Now, I understand the logic behind it. And the logic behind it is this. You wanted Frank Latson. Frank Latson was the number one receiver on your board out of South Dade High School. He committed to Clemson. That seemed like it was going to happen. I think we talked about this on a show about a month ago. Hey, he's going to go back up there for their spring game. If they can get him not to commit up there, then you know, maybe they'll have a chance come the fall. But Ladson's a real smart kid, and he has a spreadsheet of like which schools have put out receivers and who they've put out. And once I found out that, I knew Florida State was screwed. Because, and now, granted, now he did say that Kelly and Lockett were making a you know, like improving their relationship with him. But two receivers drafted in 10 years is not going to get it done for a kid who looks at that kind of stuff and pays attention to that kind of stuff. So when you lose your 6'5" Frank Ladson, you do want to have a tall outside pass catcher. Now, Ladson's a lot better player than Goolsby is. I'm not going to lie to y'all out there and tell you that they're close, because they're not close. Ladson's got elite level speed. Goolsby does not. But he does seem to have good body control. He can catch the ball away from his body. Big hands, brings in a well, a consistent hands catcher. There's some similarities. Remember when we always used to talk about how Auden Tate had a good understanding of what he was and, importantly, what he was not? Goolsby does seem to have a good idea that he's not like running by everybody, and does like seem to have kind of big man skills. I want to see what the tight ends look like in this offense come the fall, and just see, hey, like, if Cam McDonald is a tight end in this offense, can Goolsby be one too? This is an interesting take, because I think they're only going to take two receivers. So if Goolsby's coming in as like a pure receiver, is it going to be Goolsby and Dunmore and Dunn? Assuming that Thompson qualifies, obviously. If Goolsby's your tight end, or hybrid tight end, or slash tight end, or whatever you want to call it, then maybe it's Goolsby plus two more. Because right now, I think they're trying to be really picky, and they only want to take two receivers. There's also, he's got to continue to make good progress in the classroom. We know he loves Florida State. They do like some of his attributes. This is not like I'm not trying to say he's not a good player. I'm just a little bit surprised that he's in the class as early as he is. But look, certainly they see some upside in his game.
Anybody else that you wanted to mention as far as the weekend? Well, we should probably mention real quickly the 2020 kid that I referenced as well. Keyshawn Green.
Oh, yeah. Keyshawn Green is a beast linebacker. They need linebackers in the worst way, man. A lot of these kids on this roster right now just can't play, haven't been developed, and you know, they're not going to be able to make up for those lost years. And Keyshawn Green is out of Wakulla, which also produced a guy by the name of Nigel Bradham,
yeah,
who you may remember for such things as like committing murder on the field against Miami, etc. So he's a big-time hitter, big-time playmaker. They're extremely excited to get him in the class. We also need to talk about the kid who committed tonight. And that's Renardo Green, cornerback out of Wekiva High School in Apopka there. Tell you, Wekiva's program is really coming on. I love the way Wekiva guys play on defense. They kind of remind me, actually, of Deerfield Beach kids. And if you're a coach in the state of Florida, or if you really follow Florida recruiting, you understand what I mean by that. And what I mean is just physical, tough, pest dog. I mean, just, I think Renardo Green is a good take for them, actually. And I know some people were surprised that they took him, but I've seen him be an excellent cornerback throughout the 7-on-7 circuit and camp circuit this summer. Certainly when Rat Pack didn't have him for a time out there in L.A., his 7-on-7 team out of Orlando, they struggled a bit. They had to play Brendan Gant there at corner. I think it's a good get for them. I do wonder how tall he is. I know on one of his profiles he's listed at 6 foot. On one he's 5'10". And maybe split the difference. Certainly that's only 2-inch difference. But I think he can offer some versatility for you as a guy who can play inside and out, both at nickel or dime, probably preferably when they do face some four wide teams. But also play outside. I think that's a good take, and a guy who fits what you want as an aggressive press man corner in Harlan Burnett's defense. And by the way, another good article on Tomahawk Nation this week is about the improved technique being shown by Florida State's corners. I don't know if you saw that one or not, but you know, we had a guy who's a high school coach break that down. And the main takeaway was foot placement and patience. Guys not overextending and trying to jab and missing, right? If you're going to press, it's not about necessarily driving the guy into the ground. It's about disrupting the timing of his route and rerouting him where you want him to go so that he goes to where the help is on your defense. It's not like trying to hit him with a chokeslam like the Undertaker. Unfortunately, sometimes some guys on defense, I'm not going to say all of them because some of their technique was just fine and some of them were kind of not, but Like some of those guys last year, man, did not always demonstrate, Ingram, the best press man technique that they possibly could.
Yeah. Yes, and if only our limitations were limited to press man technique last year. But yeah, there was a whole lot of fundamentals of all sorts lacking. Well,
we got to talk about a couple more things here as it relates to recruiting. Sam Howell commits, immediately becomes a recruiter, and who does he get to come with him? Kavarius Couch. Excuse me, Crouch, not Couch. That doesn't suck.
Mm-hmm.
Number one athlete in the nation. Look, I think his future is as a linebacker. Now he still likes to play running back too. Florida State, from what I understand right now, is recruiting him at both, and they'll let him figure out what he wants to do. He's that good of an athlete. I mean, he's a legit. God, I saw him at the Army Combine. He's, I don't know. Like I'm gonna eyeball it and say. Like 6'2", 6'3", and easily over 210.
Yes, he's big, man. He doesn't look all that different than Wilder Jr. did in high school. I mean,
you're right.
He's a big, full body, full frame linebacker, running back.
Wilder Jr. was like almost like unnaturally cut up,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the pro wrestler, you know, type thing. Crouch is a really good athlete, very physical player. I think his future's on defense, potentially. But if you want to have him carry the ball, too, no objections here, man. But getting him to come down, fellow North Carolina product, there was a little bit of a confusion, Ingram, on Friday as to where he was going to visit. Would it be Florida State or Florida? And a lot of the Florida sites had reported that he was going to visit there, but it didn't look like that. No, he visited Florida State instead of the Gators, so. Kind of a little mini recruiting win for FSU there. Also, I was told Akeem Dent is extremely solid in FSU's class, like lock city, and was doing a great job recruiting for the Seminoles this weekend. So that is a big time thing. And as it was described to me by one of the recruits there, the kid basically acts like he's already on the team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's similar to what we had heard when he spent his spring break up here in Tallahassee. So really good rundown. I'm trying to check my notes here. I don't think anybody else really that we need to talk about. A couple real quick names. Jamarcus Johnson, the kid who we've been high on for a long time. Remember the guy Southern Miss initially offered out of Nashville, Georgia, Barron County. He showed up again. Tyler Davis, the defensive lineman teammate of Renardo Green, showed up. I don't think Davis is a take for Florida State at this point. I'd be surprised if he was. Quarterback David Baldwin also came. He's the IMG's QB. FSU certainly wants to take two QBs in the class. Tyson Fomacon, who we've previously mentioned, did end up committing to Clemson. So that was not totally unexpected, I would say, after FSU chose Howell. And I use the word chose intentionally there, by the way. I do believe that Fomacon tried to commit to Florida State, and Florida State asked him to hold off because they preferred Sam Howell. And Fomacon was the first to visit, and Howell came second. Now, I can't blame Fomacon for choosing Clemson because he's probably going to sit redshirt, and he's a fairly raw prospect and needs to develop some. And once Trevor Lawrence gets out of there in 3 years, hopefully, he'll probably be able to play some. But for those of y'all asking, hey, did they screw up in choosing or in you know Howell and not getting Fomacon? We won't be able to answer that, I don't think, definitively for another 3 or 4 years. But certainly, it is worth noting that they made the choice to take Howell instead of Fomacon because they absolutely could have had Fomacon several months ago.
All right, bud. Good a time as any for us to move to our buy or sell segment. Something that we were fortunate enough to get a lot of positive feedback on during our time at Township on Saturday. So glad that you, the listener, are enjoying this. Great for us to be able to spend time with Chad and Shannon. And these guys are absolute Seminole fans. I mean, they're sitting there checking the latest commitments. And just great that we're able to partner with people that are as uniquely qualified as they are in their industry and also share a real commonality in the fact that they're Noles. They want to work with Seminoles. They want to put you in the best place possible And we are fortunate to be able to pair with him and look forward to being able to work with him for the foreseeable future.
That's right, man. We partner with Chad of Resolution Home Loans. And when you call 844-FSU-LOAN or visit FSUhomeloans.com, you get to work with his ace. That's right. You get to work directly with Shannon. Shannon's already got two deals done for Knollcast listeners in just, what, 6 or 7 weeks now that we've had him as an advertiser. It's been a great partnership so far. If you're in the market for a home, definitely hit those guys up. $500 off your closing costs if they don't close within 15 days of your contracted closing date. They do it with their Almost Home program. That's because they eat the cost of the underwriting up front. So you know how much you're going to be approved for, so there's no guesswork. They want you to be able to buy with confidence, shop with confidence. Resolution Home Loans, that's 844-FSU-LOAN or FSUhomeloans.com. And we have one recruiting one, Ingram, to add in here on the buyer-sell segment. Buyer-sell, Quayshon Fuller does not end up in Florida State's class. I'm going to buy that. He has not visited recently, as far as I know, and I think he's a good player, but not necessarily a great player. I think they may have some other guys higher on their board right now, and if he does not intend to visit more often, then I'm not sure how much, you know, you should necessarily count him as a commit. I guess we'll have to see. The spring evaluation period, by the way, it started today, so we will see if Florida State's coaches hit the road probably next week, because that's when a lot of spring practices start in the state of Florida, and I think a week after for Georgia. So they'll be coming up there your way as well, but we'll see kind of how that situation develops. Florida State has the number one recruiting class in the nation right now, man, and that is pretty cool. And I have some thoughts on that. I guess I'll spin off this buy or sell segment real quick, but I do think that they have a really good class right now. But I also think this class is going to change significantly between now and National Signing Day. And I don't just mean additions. I mean subtractions. I think that you will see at least three of the players in this class. Just if I had to take a look, and I'm not saying I have three in mind, but there's like a group. And I think three of the kids in the current class will not end up in this class come the fall. So mark this down. I think we do have a listener, maybe, who expressed interest in tracking our buyer-sell stuff. So we'll see how that works. I know the Effectively Wild Baseball podcast has somebody do that for them, which is pretty cool. I did not have time to do that, so I will not do that. So if somebody wants to volunteer to do that and be sort of our like official show historian, that's cool. It's always good for like look-back content in the fall, so you can email us thenolcast@gmail.com. But hey, man, it's never bad to have the number one recruiting class in the nation and have the number one player in the nation, like tweeting about Willie Taggart, exactly, like every hour on the hour.
It's Uncle Willie, bud.
I will also say the higher rated kids in their class are the ones that I think are more solidly committed to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. And hopefully Travis Jay will get his recruiting star bump soon, because he certainly deserves it. And there are not 430 better players than him in the country. Of that, I am pretty certain. So, Ingram, I got one for you. Buy or sell? By the way, it seems like some people are saying buy or sell. It is definitely buy or sell, people. All right. Buy or sell. Laybourne will get more touches or yards than Patrick this season. Than Cam? So it's asking us both about Patrick and Cam.
I'll cut this conversation short on Cam. So, on Patrick, I'm going to buy. LeBourne is just a better fit for the offense in general. I think you can use him in a more multiple ways in which you deploy him. And sitting here in the middle of April, I will buy the idea that LeBourne is more involved, particularly if I can squeeze out the touches and focus on yards. I will most certainly buy that.
Right there with you. Buy on Kalen having more yards than Patrick, and 100% sell on him outdoing Cam. The spring game is just a split squad scrimmage. I don't think there's anybody who would have asked that question before the spring game. Probably should not let your opinions of players be swayed that much. And I get it; it's the only one the fans get to watch, but probably should not let that happen. That your opinion is swayed quite that much based off just one spring scrimmage. So Buy or sell, Xavier Peters will have the biggest impact in year one among non-early enrollee freshmen. This is a good one.
This is a good one. I do believe I'm going to sell this, though, with the idea that if you let me buy anyone, then that would be Treshawn Harrison.
Okay, so that's where I was going with this. If I was going to sell, it's Treshawn, because I don't – there's an interesting buy or sell in this, by the way, later on, that I think people will have some interest in, and it directly relates to the Treshawn thing. Harrison is so dynamic with the ball in his hands that it's going to be very hard for him not to get the football. And I don't think some of these other options that are like played receiver in the spring game, other than Terry, Matthews, Gavin, obviously McKitty at tight end. I'm not sure those other guys who are catching balls in the spring game are going to catch balls come fall. I really don't. But because you sold, don't want to just be contrarian. Yeah, I think that Xavier Peters plays with such violence and such relentlessness, and this defense needs that nasty edge to it, especially at the defensive end slash linebacker position, especially if you can figure out some way to play him a little bit at linebacker or something.
Right. See. The more he can play on 2 feet, the more that I would be inclined to buy this.
Buy or sell, the FSU stuff percentage on designed runs is under 20. So this is a Bill Connolly advanced stat, and I'm going to pull up the I just want to see what the stuff rate was for Willie Taggart offenses running the football in previous years. So, all right. On offense, 16.4% of runs were stuffed. So that would be based on last year's Oregon team, that would be a buy with this question using 20% as the benchmark. Let's get a comparison to what Florida State was. What do you think Florida State was last year as far as what percentage of their runs were stuffed? And I believe stuffed is runs stopped like at or behind the line of scrimmage. Florida State was 23.5, which was 121st in the nation. Might I also add that it is very easy to stop somebody in the backfield if you have complete confidence that the quarterback is never going to pull the ball and keep it.
Yeah,
so you can just make a beeline for the running back. Even if the offensive line play did not improve at all, and I think it will improve some, despite personnel limitations, even if the offensive line play didn't improve at all, I think your stuff rate would go down simply because defenses are going to have to respect the quarterback keeping the football in this offense. It doesn't mean Blackman's going to be like a major run threat, but he's going to keep it enough for defenses to at least have to think a minute or two. Also, I think defenses are going to be a little more worn out. Not everybody's going to have like legs like springs every single snap against Florida State now, because they're going to have to play about 30% more snaps against FSU. So I will buy this, man. I'm going to go ahead and buy and say that they get their stuff rate on offense under 20%.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on this one. I will buy because of some of the reasons you listed and some of the reasons that we talked about earlier in the podcast as far as formations and creating an environment that's a little bit more run-friendly as far as the way that you manipulate the safeties and linebackers in the defense. So I will be right there and buy that with you. So the fourth one, Bud, buy or sell, a linebacker leads the team in tackles. Questioner says, not tackles for loss, but simply tackles.
I'm going to go ahead and buy. I think if Dontavius Jackson stays healthy, he is going to lead the team in tackles. I think this defense will play a lot of man-to-man, which means your corners may not be making quite as many tackles. And I think that Dontavius is a guy who I have a very hard time seeing coming off the field very much, absent injury, knock on wood, which doesn't happen. I'm going to go ahead and buy. I'm going to say Dontavius. And it doesn't necessarily mean I think he's going to be awesome, but I think he can rack up, I don't know, can you get 100 out of him? Can you get 85? That might be enough.
Sign of a healthy defense, more times than not, is that your linebacker's your leading tackler. I think that the way that Jackson's kind of emerging from the rest of that group, not just with some of the intangibles, but his real level of play, I would have a hard time pointing to anybody else at this point that I would think would lead the team in tackles. So I too will buy. And so far, well, we had a little bit of a difference of opinion with the Peters, but we have mirrored each other fairly closely so far. The next one is buy or sell the idea that Florida State finishes second in the division.
I'm going to buy this. I really don't. Okay, so I think NC State and Louisville will take a step back. I think Clemson will take a step forward, and they already won the division last year. So what other teams finished ahead of you in the division last year? In league play last year, or in division last year, NC State went 4-2. Florida State went 2-4. Yuck.
Yep.
Wake Forest went 4-2. I like Florida State's chances to finish second in the division, for sure. I don't think that they'll beat Clemson or beat Clemson in the division, mostly because Clemson had three potential first round defensive linemen come back for their senior years miraculously, which we discussed on prior shows.
Amateur athletics, definitely.
Yeah, amateurs. Which, hey man, I hope they got paid. I really do, because that'd be a shame if they didn't. I'm gonna go ahead and buy.
Yeah, I'll buy.
Who would you take to finish third?
Between what NC State left lost on defense and Louisville losing maybe the best player in program history, I would probably take NC State to finish third.
I'm thinking so too, because the quarterback, I'm just looking at, who does Wake get in the non-conference or in the crossover?
Mm-hmm.
They get Pitt, they get Pitt and Duke. That's a pretty good crossover for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They get Syracuse at home. That's very winnable. They're at NC State on short rest on a Thursday. You know what? Okay, I'm going to agree with you. I'm taking NC State to be third based on this way too early prediction. All right, this one's interesting here. Deontay Sheffield had more yards in the spring game than he will have all year. For reference,
nine catches,
117 yards.
Okay, thank you. Nine catches for 117. I am going
and seven rushing yards.
Okay. No offense to Mr. Sheffield, but I will buy this. It would be surprised if that production was recreated in gameplay this year.
I think I'm gonna buy. And that's simply because of the talent level coming in of the freshman. I feel like Sheffield's not going to be in contention for a starting role or anything like that, certainly, and he's going to have to battle against scholarship guys coming in. Who I think are more physically talented than him. 117, that's almost a good number. Because you figure if he's the sixth or seventh most receiving yards on a team, those guys a lot of times don't get over 100 yards, especially if you factor in just receivers. So I'm going to go ahead and buy. But that's going to be something to watch for sure, because he had a lot of opportunity in the spring game. But I don't expect him to play like that, or as far as playing time, come the fall.
The next one, a little bit of humor here, whether intentional or unintentional. Buy or sell, five or five-plus uniform combos being deployed this season.
Okay, let's just run through this. Traditional away. White on white, all garnet. And the blacks, which the kids want to wear for the Virginia Tech game, and I think that might really happen. That's five right there.
So really, this comes down to three or more alternate uniforms being deployed throughout the course of the season.
Right. Okay, yeah. So if you read it as traditional, home and away being set of one, then you have to sell. But I think if you read it as just different uniform looks, then you have to buy. Because they always use two at a minimum, their home and away. We also have the possibility of, you have the white on white, like we said, you have the garnet on garnet. You also have the garnet top white pant home look, which is also a potential one.
Right.
Pro Combat hopefully does not ever come back. I'm going to buy.
I'm probably going to buy. I would say, and I don't have any inside info here or something, but I would say the chance that Florida State wears a traditional uniform in the Virginia Tech game may be in the 30s right now. So I think you'll get a quick one in game one, which means you only need two more to hit this number. So, yeah, at that point, I will buy the idea that you see three non-standard uniforms deployed throughout the course of the year.
Buy or sell a top five recruiting class for 2019.
I will buy this. Yes.
Yeah, I'm buying too. They want to take 25. Yeah, I'm going to buy for sure. Especially Willie Taggart can recruit. He gets kids on campus. He sells them like crazy once they get on campus. He connects with the parents. This is a great recruiting staff, as far as I can tell. Yeah, I'm buying all day. Buy or sell 6 passing touchdowns by Dodd quarterbacks this year. 6. Parentheses. Akers and DJ were both high school quarterbacks, and Keith Gavin threw a touchdown in the spring. Yes, he did, and I'm still selling by a lot. I should have probably edited this to make it like 3 or something, and I still would probably sell.
Would you say 2? Let's put the number there.
Okay, 2. I'm going to buy 2. Okay. 6 is just ridiculous. That's a non-passing touchdown basically every other game of the regular season.
Yeah.
That's going to not work eventually. People are going to just not let you do that. 2, I'm going to go ahead and buy. I think I really like the chance they throw at least 2.
But the final installation of buy or sell tonight is buy or sell the idea that Florida State finishes with the highest ranked 2019 class of the Big 3.
I'm going to buy.
Yeah. Please.
Yeah.
Let me buy.
Class size and ability to connect. Over-unders came out today, Ingram, for the SEC. I guess the ACC will happen later. Florida's over-under is 7 wins regular season. Now, look, I think Florida State's is going to come out at like 8, by the way. So don't go talking too much smack. Texas A&M also at 7.
Yeah, saw that.
7-5, Ingram. That is
7-5.
7-5. You know what else 7-5 you mashed together? 75, as in $1 million guaranteed. So,
did you see the video of old Jimbo getting his first chance to saw it off after the game?
Second chance
or second? Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. I don't want to.
Is saw it off the Aggie sway?
I believe.
Like
yeah,
the same thing.
Yeah, I think that's what they call that. Yeah, a 5 loss season. I'd love to see Jimbo what Jimbo Fisher looks like on say loss number 2, where he's. Got some male cheerleader in his face trying to get him to saw it off after a 21-point loss at home to Alabama or some other member of the
SEC. Do they dance after wins?
I believe they...
Excuse me, after losses?
I think they saw it off regardless of outcome.
Oh, so they're one of the schools that's like...
It's like go sing the, you know, college hymn or whatever.
You know, like the hymn to the Garnet Gold that the band always plays, or the Chiefs always play, like after every game, regardless of win or lose. And like the players are supposed to go over there and like salute it, whatnot. And if they lose, they just don't. Like A&M's one of the schools that's
like Notre Dame does this. They go over there and sing regardless of outcome.
I don't know that Jimbo's going to be super okay with that. Or like I'm sure he'll do it.
I don't think he will do it. I don't think he'll do it. I don't
think he'll just like walk the locker room
after a loss, and the next time he'll say, "Not a chance." No,
I don't know if that's going to go over so well if you're losing 5 times a year.
It's a situation that we've said may come into conflict since day one of that relationship. You've got an institution with seemingly infinite amount of traditions and kind of quirky desires and expectations and. A coach who has no time or patience for either of that. So we'll see how that plays out.
Indeed. Oh, so the reason I brought that up was because, like, if Florida's going to have a better recruiting class than Florida State, it probably needs to have, like, a very surprising year on the field to do that. And at least Vegas does not anticipate that happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll stick with no. I think Florida State will have the top class in the state. You got anything else?
I think that's all I got for tonight, man.
The show is long as hell.
Yeah, got a lot of stuff.
We're gonna give it to the people, and we'll make it one episode, one megasode.
Yeah,
and 5 stars on iTunes. We were supposed to give this guy's wife a shout out. By the way, he left it in his iTunes review, but we've received a couple, like almost 100 new reviews recently, and I cannot control F and search for like a specific word or two on iTunes reviews, so I can't find it. But we did see it, so. Let your wife know that we are shouting her out without her name. But we saw it. We appreciate the review very much. I can't figure out where it was.
All the wives who are significant others that are so ever so patient as they get to sit and listen to hours of college or Florida State football being discussed. So great time again this weekend. Thank you so much to the people that came out. It was a fantastic opportunity for Bud and I. Tried to speak with everybody there. If I didn't or if we didn't, apologize and hopefully get a chance to do something similar in the future. So as Bud said, anytime you get a chance to support the show, whether it be 5 stars on iTunes, a review, or social media mention to our sponsors, we are greatly appreciated, or greatly appreciate your thoughts and support, and look forward to doing another one of these in the near future.